あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？ね、見えないよ。
What's good, internet? It is Monday, November 13th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 113. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me today, Patrick Klepek.
V-Sync.
Danica Harrod.
V-Sync.
And Rob Zachney.
What's going on?
I don't know. Well, I did have a V-Sync encounter this morning.
You know, as one is wont to do on a Monday morning.
On a Monday morning, sometimes you have a V-Sync encounter.
That sounds like an anime.
A V-Sync encounter.
Does it?
Oh my god!
I think it sounds like a boy band.
V-Sync encounter like could be both
like an NSYNC revival.
Well, just V-Sync would be an NSYNC, but I think V-Sync encounter is definitely at least
anime
a manga
tie-in game.
Yes, to the boy band. Exactly. I was playing, I played a game called Astbreed.
What?
I don't.
Astbreed? Sorry. Astbreed? I don't know about that.
How does this keep getting deeper?
A-S-T-E.
Yeah, that's what I said, Rob.
Wow! Oh my god!
Oh no!
Wow!
What time should I clap at? to resync for the start of the show.
We gotta start over.
I need to talk to HR.
Oh my god!
I'm sorry to our editor who definitely peaked there.
Oh Jesus. Yeah, my audio completely clipped.
Oh my god!
Off
okay.
The screen.
Okay, so there was ass breeding and a V-Sync encounter.
And a V-Sync encounter. So I played, there was a shmup, a shoot-em-up with mechs in it that came out years ago called Astbreed or Astbreed. Astbreed?
It's bad title.
It's A-S-T-E-B-R-E-E-D. It's made by Idlevice, so it was published by PlaySim, or PlayISM, not PlaySim, PlayISM. And, like, I'd always looked at it and thought it looked cool. It's, like, very high production values, lots of, like it's a 3D shmup where the camera is, like, very active. It reminds me a lot, actually, of the mech sequences in Nier, where the camera is, like, flying all around and the view is changing. And it's gorgeous, and it's like anime nonsense. There are like two anime AI girls, and they really miss their dad who died, I guess. And there's robots. It's ridiculous. It's already by default ridiculous. And then they did an enhanced version for the PS4, and then they finally brought that enhanced version back to the PC. I was like, oh, I'll finally check this out. Cool. And so I booted it up and I was like, man, this is hard. It's really good, but it's like, it's really hard. And I played for like 45 minutes and I started the new stage and things moved so fast that I was like, this is broken, actually. Like, there's no way this is accurate. This has to be wrong. And like, it wasn't just that the enemies were moving too close or moving too quickly. Like, from the jump, I should have known it was fucked because there was a bit where it was like the anime lady was speaking on the bottom left of the screen, while on the top right, it was also giving me like the lore backstory timeline. And then there was also something happening like from a ship was sending in new communications and they were all overlayered, and I was like, I think this game is maybe just trying to give me a sensory overload. I thought that was like part of the experience. Then I finally got to a boss and it was like, oh, I can't, there's no one could ever try to get through this, could beat this boss at these speeds. Is this broken? Has anyone played this game? And someone in chat was like, oh, do you have V-Sync on? I was like, yeah, I have V-Sync on. Of course I turned on V-Sync. He's like, oh, well, then it goes three times faster than it's supposed to. Oh, and so I beat that boss going three times faster. And I was like, because I thought it was the last boss. And I was like, I'm going to unlock my inner limits. I'm going to become a new type. I'm going to be
last Starfighter.
Yeah, exactly. Like, completely last Starfighter. Like, I have to, you know, I'm going to turn off the targeting computer. I'm going to do all the stuff that all of my heroes in space have always done. And I'm going to just power through. And I did. And I beat that boss. And it was not the last boss of the game. And I got to the next boss, and that was just broken. So I like, all right, I'll go out to the main menu and I'll turn off V-Sync. And I came back in and almost got nauseous. It was so slow. Like, it was like, it was like I was going to, it's like my body, my experience had ascended to another level. I was full galaxy brain. Everything else was so slow around me. I still died to that boss the first time, but then I beat it. And it was a fun experience. It was like almost like removing the limiter of the ship was like going down into non-V-Sync mode. What I now want to see is just like speedruns of this game. all V-synced up and like three times as fast. I want to see pros play it. Anyway, so, that's like, my day.
If you go to speedrun.com, there'll be like a separate category that's like for like with V-sync glitch on.
Exactly. There should be. That's my day. So, I killed the aliens. It was good.
If Dean Takahashi got dragged for a month over Cuphead, like, I think we pretty clearly need like statues of you in public squares all over this great land.
Gamers, please carry me. Don't carry me on your shoulders. But that's what they should be offering to do, at the very least. God, weirdly, that's all I've been doing. Has been playing that mech game this morning. Everything else is stuff I can't talk about yet, unfortunately. Have y'all been playing? I mean, maybe we should just dive in. Maybe we should pivot from Rob's very good, astute Dean Takahashi gamers are mean to people thing to talk about how gamers are mean sometimes.
Gamers are mean.
Yeah, there's a story I just published on the site today here's how I wrote it in the tweet, and then I'll explain why I had to write it. I said, I shouldn't have had to write a story like this today, but then a video games fan says, I feel sorry for the amazing devs that put all the hard work into making the game as good as they can, only to see it ruined by EA, but I am too disgusted and outraged to think about them. Uh-huh. And that comment came into response to something that happened over the weekend where... I mean, there's been this ongoing discussion around, more high level about loot boxes. 2017.
You're the crate. You're the loot box. Yeah.
Like, it's just been where it's taken a turn because it's been coming out in a bunch of high profile console games specifically. As you know, it's been in Overwatch for 18 months or whatever. Like, it's been around, but it's really kind of like hit home in a lot of big games in 2017. And specifically, there's been a lot of conversation about how it interacts with Battlefront 2, because one of the cool things that Battlefront 2 does, and this game comes out tomorrow, I think reviews are just dropping like as we're recording this, is that they dropped the season pass thing. They just said, hey, like, season passes split user bases, and it doesn't make sense for keeping community continuity for a game that we're trying to treat as a service, which obviously EA is a company that wants to do a lot of that stuff. And so that's cool, but then they've got to make up that revenue stream somewhere else. And the way they decided to do that was incorporating loot boxes. And part of the reason people have been upset about how the loot boxes work in Battlefront is because they're not just cosmetic. They actually have an impact on the way you play the game. So you can get loot boxes that say impact like how fast your health regenerates. And so it becomes a matter of the loot boxes or the add-ons to your character impacting the play experience beyond just your ability to get a headshot, right? It's that headshot may be impacted by this loot box that gives you like a better drop, and that drop is then equipped on your character. So anyway, like, this is all happening. So there's been like a really frenetic conversation around this game, even though by all accounts, like, as a game, like, people seem to think it's pretty like pretty good, and I can report, having played a bunch of the single player this weekend, like, it plays pretty good. What happened over the weekend was that someone did some sort of like back of the envelope math to figure out how long it would take for you to unlock a hero character. And the hero characters are your Luke Skywalkers, your Darth Vaders.
You don't play as them all the time. They're just like, you... Or there's a mode where you can play as them all the time, right? And then there's, like, in a certain mode type, a thing will happen. Then the hero character, you'll get to play as your chosen hero character for a little
while. Right. I believe that's the way it works. And so then that's when you get to play as, like, a really overpowered character in the game and kind of dominate a match for a little while. The back of the envelope map essentially determined that it would take 40 hours of play to unlock enough currency to get the loot box that would allow you to get a hero character. And this person was specifically upset about not being able to play as Darth Vader, but it applies to all sorts of other characters in the game. And this set off an EA developer then responded to that and said, like, oh, hey, we try to take into account feedback from the beta. Like, it was a very generic PR response that now PR happens in Reddit threads, because that's just what 2017 is.
That's the world we live in.
And it makes sense. They should be doing that. That's where a lot of those communities live. But that became then, and you can read about this on Motherboard, this angle of it, like, the most downvoted post in Reddit history. And EA has this complicated history with social media and people running campaigns. They were famously, I think, several times voted like the worst company of X year a couple of times through different like consumerist voting things, which was definitely not some of the other companies in there had done far worse things to humanity than whatever EA chose to do.
But like, massive oil leak. No, still EA. Still is the worst.
And I mean, it speaks to like the galvanizing nature of video game fans, and that's why Gamergate and blah, blah, blah. Like, those are things we can talk about and explains why stuff like that happens. But, as opposed to just allowing that, like that, in terms of people wanting to make a point, like being able, like tech writers are going to want to write about the most downvoted post in Reddit history. Like that's that's catnip. That's easy. And so if you wanted to make a point about loot boxes and things like that, that was actually a pretty effective way to make your point and to be heard and to hopefully influence sort of the balance changes to that game right as launch is about to happen. But of course, when this stuff happens, there are always people that take it way, way too far as communities don't police themselves and don't call out this sort of behavior. And there was specifically this EA developer that revealed that they had been, you know, tons of death threats. They'd been all sorts of harassment all week long simply for explaining from their perspective it wasn't as bad as it was being portrayed by some fans. Like a pretty banal comment, a pretty like, yes, maybe you're arguing he's towing the company line a little bit, but also like relatively inoffensive in the grand scheme of things. And then that results in them getting a bunch of death threats, right?
It's
that wasn't even someone who worked on that.
Well, and that's the other thing about this whole thing here is like, one of the things that it always like boggles my mind when people go after the devs, like, yeah, this dev is, imagine a dev on Battlefront 2 who has spent the last year working on the sound of blasters or working on like the level design or working on what the, you know, working on like what it feels like to be Darth Vader. That motherfucker doesn't want you to have to spend money to play as Darth Vader. Like that person wants to get a paycheck and like is part of a company where someone in a suit somewhere, someone at EA proper, like at the publishing arm of EA, has decided that the way to make money on this game is to use this specific system of loot crates and credits and you know, whatever currency, real money currency. And like, it sucks, and I'm all for criticizing that system. I think that that system preys on those with addictive personalities and histories of addiction. I think that it preys on those who have issues with gambling. Like, I absolutely am fine with criticizing that stuff. But it, like, for me, it suggests something is fucked with the way at which game players and gamer communities understand how games are made and who is in charge of what. And also just, like, that sort of response is just not productive. Like, that response isn't the thing that's going to make games better. Like, what is actually going to make games better is to understand the conditions that they're made in, and to be upset that that EA is making decisions with such an unstable, unsustainable model at its heart that they're willing to be like, well, we can't just make this a $60 game, so instead what we're going to do is make it a $60 game and then attach this shitty progression system that makes you dig into your pockets for your loose change. Like, that represents a larger position in EA that you can only engage with if you're willing to step back and be like, is the game industry in this moment sustainable? Is it fair to the workers who are inside of it? Who someone has to lose because EA wants to win, right? And like, that is, I want people to get to that second level, and it's frustrating to see them not.
Having worked in anime and having worked, like, obviously working in games journalism, you don't really work with the people creating this stuff. But when I worked in anime, we saw this all the time, working with publishers and working with, you know, Japanese content partners, people constantly criticizing, like, manga writers or criticize, like, for chapters coming out later.
Right, exactly. For shit that they probably had no... Right. Like, it wasn't their fault that this thing got delayed. Mm-hmm. Or even
and
if it was...
don't really care. They don't really care to learn the process behind all of this stuff or to dig deeper into the bigger problem. They just care what they can see right in front of their faces and what's easiest for them to, you know, to criticize and go after.
It's so frustrating, and it's so easy to... Like, my response is often to make this, like, broad sweeping condemnation of identity being built around games. And I'm not sure that that's the wrong strategy here. Like, I don't know that that's actually wrong, but I've tried in the last year or so to, like, okay, what are the play? Like, we made a website about games because we think and believe that games are important to people. And like, what's frustrating is to see it pushed this far, that like, we want to be able to say that games can help people and that games bring joy to people's lives and help them understand difficult issues and you know, carry them through difficult years like 2017 has been. And I want to applaud that. And I want, like, that's part of the reason why I love games is the community that builds up around it and the way in which people can find and explore their own personal identities through games. But what's frustrating is that because games are these big budget AAA games are like purely commercial, purely, you know, made as entertainment products to be bought and sold, like, you end up with this consumer identity problem. And that consumer identity problem is, it's hard to imagine us getting past that right now because we don't have that. We don't really have that middle tier yet. Maybe it's developing now where, like, we absolutely have the independent art scene. We absolutely have a scene of, you know, kind of alt culture game makers who are making stuff that's non-commercial. And we absolutely have this, like, smaller independent scenes that are growing, and but even those bend way hard towards commercial, and you see just as much anger sent towards indie devs. And so you're not seeing this, like, this development of a games culture that does understand game making the way that, you know, you may have seen in film as, like, independent film culture was growing up. And, like, I don't know, I would like more of that, and it's frustrating and demoralizing sometimes to see this shit. Like, also, death threats just fucking suck, man.
Well, I just, so it's funny, so often after I publish a piece, I'll get, like, messages privately from some developers or other folks that, like, respond to the story, and, like, immediately I got a bunch of messages on my phone after I had published on this story in which, like, there were, like, very prominent game developers in, like, very senior positions and public positions talking about the different measures they have to take,
right,
to protect themselves went from just, like, their own mental health, right? Like, so, like, one of the developers that reached out to me was, like, you know, he still uses Twitter, but then has to put in all these different things, like making sure he can't see mentions from people he doesn't follow,
right,
and other,
right,
things. Not because he doesn't. So this is where the point I make in the story where, like, this backfires against the goals, like, even if you, like, all the things you're saying are correct, Austin, and that, like, people should better understand, like, where the power dynamics, right, lie in these companies and where you are focusing your energies and criticism, like, but the way this is focused, the way this is enacted, the way it's rolled out, undermines the very thing that you're trying to accomplish, which is getting developers to listen to you and the feedback you're providing. Because the response I got from a bunch of developers was to say, because of shit like this, I have to find alternative ways to listen,
right,
or hiring people in firms to go and find that information for them so they can filter it through a lens that isn't directly from the fans, because doing that is unhealthy for them, is not productive for them. And, you know, we live in this, you know, social media world where, like, you know, all the barriers are coming down and we're all, you know, on the same playing field. We can all talk to one another. And, well, actually, like, yes, it's bad apples that are ruining it for, like, a larger group of people. But as I also point out in the piece, like, it's on us in our various communities. Like, if you're in that Battlefront community or you see your friend on Twitter, like, saying this shit, like, it's on you to tell them it's wrong and,
right,
it's bad. Like, it's, right, not just, like, yes, I can get on my soapbox and write a story that says, like, shit's bad. But, like, I hope the takeaway in there is that if you see people in your communities acting this way, it is on you. It's on me, too. Like, I'm in communities of my own. And, like, it's on all of us. Like, this extends from, like, you know, racist, shitty people voting for Donald Trump to people who are going out and harassing on social media because they're upset about, like, the grind instituted into Battlefront 2. Like, it's on us to, like, when people talk about call-out culture, like, there's lots of bad parts of call-out culture, but, like, when you see, like, objectively bad things happening by people that you know, whether they're your friends or online acquaintances, like, it is on you to say to them, this shit's bad, because it means more when it's you saying it. Like the,
right,
ripple effect of me saying it is hopefully just to encourage other people to do that in their personal,
right,
lives, because random dude on Twitter that I'm going to drag publicly, like, that doesn't accomplish very much. And it's why I anonymize those people, is because, A, I don't want those people to get harassed for some shit that they said, because that's not productive. And two, it doesn't mean anything coming from me, because the power dynamic between me and some random guy on Twitter, like, he's just going to think I'm being a bully, as opposed to his friend saying, hey, this shit's wrong. That probably means more when it's someone who means something in your life.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that seems to be pretty consistent across the board with everything that's going on with, like, sexual harassers and, like you mentioned, like, Trump, you know, assholes on Twitter and whatever else, is that people need to be holding each other more accountable.
It's hard. It's definitely hard. And like, if this needs to, if you need to be have that little bit of encouragement to do that, this is me saying, please do that. Like, it is, it can be very tough to have that conversation, but it, at the end of the day, in my experience, has ended up being a lot more productive. I've definitely done that thing before where it's like you blow up the conversation in your head that you have to have as like, oh, it's going to be this whole big thing. Is this going to ruin my friendship? Like, probably not. Like, probably what you'll say is like, hey, come on, that's a little over the line. And the other person will be like, I know, I was really upset. You're right. I'll be careful in the future. And like, that shit.
It is scary.
It is. Totally. Hard. Totally. So besides death threats, what else is happening?
Y'all mind if I redefine play?
Yeah, what? Are you going to redefine play?
I'm taking over for EA. I'm redefining
play. Oh, is that their thing? Is redefine play the EA slogan right now?
Yes.
Fuck. God.
Well, mission almost accomplished.
Jesus. It depends on how you think about it. There's lots of redefinition going on. I thought you were about to talk about Horizon. I was like, oh shit, maybe the Horizon DLC is so good it's redefined play. Is it? Is that how good it is? Or is it just like, eh?
Well, as a person who truly, truly, truly enjoyed Horizon Zero Dawn, it's probably like my number one game of the year, followed very closely by Nier. I think the DLC is just like more of Horizon in like every way, shape, and form. There's the DLC opens up like a huge new section of the map. You get new weapons, you get new armor, there's new machines to fight. And it still, I think, has that same problem with appropriation that it had in the main game, but almost more focused in the DLC because it focuses on the Banuk tribe, which
is that the one that was in like the northeast of the map? You fought a big spider there, maybe?
They're the ones who like who make friendly with the machines.
Right.
Yeah, and they have like all those, they have all the wires like through their skin, and they look very cool, but yeah, that's the part that I could do without in that game. I think what I really love about Horizon is climbing and jumping and fighting machines and laying traps.
And taking dope photos.
Yeah, and taking photos. I think photo mode is like my favorite part about that game.
You did there was one tweet that you made this weekend that was like you were appreciating the time of day photo option.
The time of day just slider. Like,
yeah, it was just like,
what?
Yeah, you don't know about this?
No. That's I don't use photo modes because I have zero creative ability to frame anything, and every time I try, I just get bummed out and just move on. But that is, you can change the time of day in real time.
Click the tweet I just linked you to in the chat.
You can change the time of day. You can change the depth of field to focus on things. You can make Aloy get into like different positions, or you can remove her from the photo entirely. Like, it's the best photo mode. I feel like Guerrilla needs to package this and like sell this to other studios because it's so good.
The time of day slider is so smart. It's just an incredibly tiny but like really like, it's one of those, you know, you see it and you're like, why wouldn't a game have done this before? And now every game should do
totally.
It. And it's like so detailed. It moves shadows, and you could get really, really cool shots of like the sun or the moon hitting the water, and you watch it move right in front of your face, so you can just like any shot you want.
The one that you did was like of this volcano, and the thing that I love about it is like the volcano in the distance, like billowing up smoke, and as the light changes, like you can see the smoke kind of take on different colors from the ambient light, and just like bits of it just disappear because of the way the contrast changed. I think it's gorgeous, and like
and like trees will disappear or show up like far off in the distance on what time of day it is because there's more fog. And I think another thing that is really cool about this DLC is that it's called the Frozen Wilds, and for the majority of it you're exploring like this really, really northeastern part of the map that's brand new, and it's all frozen winter, like snow, and it makes you feel just this utter sense of dread while you're playing. So it adds this extra layer to what you were already doing. Like, it adds this extra layer to hiding from machines because you're like crawling through the snow and you cannot see anything.
It was below freezing here like 2 days ago and I did not know it was going to be. So I was not prepared. I didn't know about that cold winter dread. It was not.
It's coming.
I'm afraid it's going to snow tomorrow. Like, I'm afraid we're in it, but we'll see.
Oh, it was already snowing in Chicago last weekend or weekend. So it's coming. Danny, I have a question. So what part, this DLC comes like pretty separated from the release of the main game. Like, that game came out in February. Mm-hmm. Or is it come in March? Anyway,
January?
It was really early.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
it was really early this year. And one, I wrote about this about Destiny when whatever the last expansion was for the base game. I wish games were better at bringing you back into a game that you've had a lot of distance from, because you forget all the mechanics. I saw Justin McElroy tweet about this, where he was like, I think his tweet was something along the lines of like, I booted up Horizon's DLC, and I was curious how many mechanics I forgot in this game. Turns out, it's all of them. Because I wish games actually had, like, an optional, like, yo, even instead, like, we notice you haven't played this game in 8 months. Like, would you like to, like, get jumped in and, like, have this game explained to you again?
Right.
I'm curious how it handles that, or if you've had much experience with that part of it.
Well, you have to be at least level 30, and you have to have beaten the Meridian part of the game to even access this DLC. So you have to be like pretty high level. As someone who has been trying to platinum the game, I have dipped back into this game like a few times over the last couple of months. Not for very long, because there's really not much you can do after the end game stuff besides like the hunting grounds, which are really boring. I didn't personally forget the mechanics, but they do make the machines a bit tougher in this DLC. They're all like possessed. You know, it's kind of like when they're corrupted, but they're possessed by this new enemy. I don't want to spoil it, but they are.
Is it a robot?
No, you know, it's still like this divine being or whatever. But also, I just want to applaud this game so much for the voice acting in this game is still just like.
It's really
some
good.
It's some of the best voice acting like I've ever heard in a video.
I really like Aloy. Like, I'm definitely lower on that game than most folks are. Maybe not most, but like then I think definitely than you are, Danny. Like, you're through the roof on it. But I still think that like Ashley Birch does like fantastic job as Aloy. Like, really emotive.
So
lots of very good subtleties to her voice.
And Aloy like never gives a shit about anything. She's always just like getting flirted with by all these random characters that you meet in the game, and she just kind of like ignores it and brushes it off, and she's still the same.
God, there is definitely I forgot about that. One of my favorite conversations this year is definitely her brushing that off. Is like literally powerful man like assuming that he is like in, and her being like, nah, actually, maybe fucking slow your roll, my guy.
Yep.
It's so good.
Yeah, but it's good. It's I feel like it's. You know, obviously I got a review copy for it, but I would have spent the money on it if I hadn't, because the game is important to me, but also it's a lot of content.
Yeah.
So.
Two notes on photo mode. One, I just remembered No Man's Sky has a really good photo mode, and they actually worked with, his name?
Oh, the photo guy, right?
The photo guy.
Oh, yeah, just like Chill Out Man, hanging out with Photo Guy.
Oh, my God, Chill Out Man. All right, pause. We might have to talk about Chill Out Man for 1 second.
Talk about him on Friday?
No, it was not. We had a guest. It wasn't the right situation. Photo Guy Gaming, ? Dead End Thrills. Yeah. It didn't come up. I just remembered it while typing. Dead End Thrills worked on the No Man's Sky photo mode. It's so good. You can place the sun in the No Man's Sky when you can look at anywhere in the galaxy or in the system. Like, oh no, the sun is over there now. So not only is it just like a time of day slider, it's all the way to like, what if we were on a different orbit? And it's really fucking good. So that's one. Two, Assassin's Creed Origins also has a good photo mode, and I want to hear what Rob says about Assassin's Creed Origins. But first, briefly, can we talk about Chill Out Man?
Chill Out Man.
Chill Out Man might milkshake duck us. I want to be clear.
I don't want to know anything. So for people that don't know, on Friday,
I just love Rob's insists like that's not possible. Not going to happen.
Well, an in real life Twitch streamer that we just found randomly on Friday and whose shtick we enjoyed. What are the odds of there being a seedy underbelly?
Stop.
Well, also, he speaks no English.
He speaks a little, but he said your name.
He said my name. He said Danica. Yeah, it was good.
Oh, that's also, very good. All the that's writing, the superior way to pronounce your name.
I don't even know what half of the stuff on his actual Twitch page was because everything was in Russian.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been all like terrible. Like,
yep, it could have been a lot of things is what I'll say.
So I, one of my like the subreddits that I check on a daily basis is called like top channels on Twitch. And so I've tried to check recently like the in real life stuff just because it's like a sort of blind spot I have. And there's been some shitty and weird conversations happening about how women are treated.
Yeah, also,
the in real.
You guys didn't talk about the video that came out last week. I don't think about that.
No, because
so
again, that
you
wasn't.
You should touch on that also. Probably.
Yeah, maybe that's the context for you going there.
Yeah, so there was a video went around in which. This is not the first time that this like conversation or like sort of explosive rhetoric has occurred around this topic on Twitch, but there has been like since In Real Life got canonically made part of Twitch as opposed to being just sort of a thing that people used on Twitch as a tool. If you go to the In Real Life section of Twitch, and I'm sure it'll be true now, you will find a number of women there in like revealing clothing, I guess would be like the way to describe it, and a lot of people watch those channels and donate money to those women. And mm-hmm. it's a very – no one's being taken advantage of. Like, people
right,
are watching a video and, like, those women are there playing video games and often, like, playing them very well. And, like, I don't see the big deal. And this – but there are a lot of – let's call them men – on the service. And there was this one in particular. There's this video, this highlight. If you go back and check, like, I think Austin, I think you, a lot of people were tweeting it. It's back on my feed under Holy Shit Part 1 and Part 2, mm-hmm. in which a man gets very aggressive about the idea that there are these women on here making money on this service in this particular fashion. Is specifically what he's saying is that it's taking away subs, it's taking away viewers. Like, the fact that these women are here is taking away from his ability to be successful on the platform. And
well, like,
and
the thing that's even maybe more important is, like, I mean, this connects back to the thing we were talking about before about identity being around consumption and or, like, uh-huh. gaming identity, gamer identity, is, like, it's framed as, like, hey, I thought we were building this community to get rid of bullies, right? Like, that's the thing that's wild.
Right, yeah,
the first 15 seconds
also,
of that video, you have no idea where he's going with it.
Hold on. The other thing is that he's framing it all in terms of this, like, nerd grievance.
Yes.
Like, mythology. But it's all being delivered in this, like, Revenge of the Nerds meets Roid Rage.
Yes, like he is like,
delivery.
His temples are pulsing. He's like in a I don't. Maybe my memory is wrong here, but like
no. He's locked in a grim rictus as
he
drops these.
He absolutely steals. He plagiarizes the Lonely Island song. I threw it on the ground by saying, "Put the pussy on the ground where it belongs."
He does
like,
do that.
Is a
that
literal
is
line
true.
From
Shit.
That video.
Shit, I didn't pick up on that the first time.
God, fuck.
It's gross. It's gross. It's I've tuned into IRL a few times, and I've even seen women, like, whatever, dancing on there. Like, who gives a shit? People are, like, if people want
Welcome
to tune
the internet.
In, if people want to donate, like, this is the same, you know, it's the same thing on Twitter where, you know, people want to chase women off the internet all the time. This
right.
is the same thing.
Right. You think that there's a whole discourse that we could have around like the demonization of sex work while also the sexualization of women like in spaces.
Yep.
Like, it's fucked,
yep.
right? Like it's so completely about like this guy isn't like this person his thing wasn't like women shouldn't get naked on the internet. It was this is my space and they shouldn't do it here because I want to mm-hmm. get paid.
I feel like he was one step away from saying I exist in the friend zone. Like, I feel like he was about to use not in the proper way because we all know that the friend zone has been has
Danica
been
has
taken
been trying
back.
To reclaim the friend zone for...
It's private Twitter. Private Twitter is the friend zone.
Oh wow.
But the thing about this video is that it did bring Patrick and all of us to
chill out, man.
Ray
because
of light.
Because
yeah,
Patrick
so
was digging
so
into it on Reddit, right.
Yeah, so I was like, I saw this video, and then the guy got banned from Twitch for 5 days. I don't know why that...
5 days, wow.
Yeah, that should have been a permanent ban.
Some time for some real reflection
on the
things he's carrying with him.
Oh, go do some... I'm not going to do this for you. Go do some search and read his Twitlonger explaining his apology, and
okay.
Oh,
it's a
God.
Thing.
Fucking
And so anyway, so I was kind of poking around at that, and it was like, I should probably start paying attention to the in real life section just to get a better sense of like what people are talking about there. And it led me to, like, I'm always interested when I'm, when, like, Periscope first came out, in real life, I'm not interested in who everyone is watching. I'm interested in the folks, like, I'm constantly, like, the people who are putting in the work for, like, really small viewer counts. They clearly are not making a living on this. Like, they're grinding away at it. Maybe they're just doing it for fun, or maybe they're doing it because they're trying to build a community. But I'm always interested in, like, folks that have, like, 27 viewers or, like, even less than that. And so one that caught my eye, and he had, like 150 or so, was, yeah, I was captivated by the name, chill_out_man. And so I clicked on it, and it was this Russian man who was definitely not being chill. I was not as advertised. It was not a chill stream. And he was
disagree.
Doing
he's chilling his own way.
Yeah.
And he was just doing karaoke and taking requests if you gave him money. And he had a very limited options for English song selections. The moderators who did speak more expansive English explained to us how the service worked that we were going into. But then we started tweeting about it, and we rocketed his viewer count from like 120 to like in the 500s. And he was very taken aback.
He
seemed
so
slightly
happy.
Freaked out about it for a little while. Like, just like, oh, hello. Like, did not quite, like, we all spoke English, so it was, we clearly had quote-unquote raided his channel, and like that usually has like a very negative connotation to it on Twitch, because usually raiding is done to try and fuck with people in a really bad
right.
way. But instead we were there to enjoy Chill Out Man and
singing
to
us
him.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
nobody fucked with him at all, as they repeatedly requested anime theme songs ad infinitum.
He knows Cowboy Bebop, but he didn't know anything else.
Oh, well, and the
also,
very much enjoyed
it Cowboy Bebop, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think so, yeah.
The very much enjoyed the moderator saying comrades, he does not know anime.
Oh, fuck.
He also has a. I dug pretty deep into Chill Out Man's life, I guess.
The lore?
Oh, wow.
And I discovered his YouTube channel, which is a lot of.
Are you going to ruin this for us?
No.
Did you just allow us to set all this up so you could just, like, fucking gut punch us at the end?
No, it's a lot of, like, uploads of his Twitch archives. But he also streams a bunch with his, I think it's his girlfriend. And
partner
she just
of some
like,
sort, yeah.
Yeah, she just kind of, like, dances in the background or, like, you know,
sick.
Sits there while he sings. And it's very nice.
I'm into it. Live
she's
your life, chill out,
him.
Man.
Good.
Hell yeah.
When he did the final countdown just for us, he did an English song for everyone. Did the final countdown. I was excited. I had to turn it off. I had to tell people in our private Discord chat, hey, we need to turn this off. We have to
we
work.
We have to go do work. It was a nice respite. It was Friday. It was a Friday morning.
It was good. It was really good.
Anyway, so from there, it was a weekend. And Rob, I know you spent some time with an Xbox One X over this weekend.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, I sure did.
Did you like?
It's called X Boinks.
Excuse, one second.
Smoking big X Boinks in Amish.
Bad. What? Can we just move on, Rob? How was your X Boinks experience?
Well, I don't know how to pick it up and run with it. If I'm being honest. So
was
there
the
was a lot of there's a lot of boinking this weekend.
Was your, yeah, okay. Well, okay, we're gonna keep moving still.
We got this. Keep going. We're good.
Tell me about Assassin's Creed Origins and also the Xbox One X.
Yeah. So let's start with the One X real quick.
Sure.
because I think because Xbox Origins is kind of the thing that, to a degree, like justified why.
Xbox Origins is a different game. Is a game about
Sorry, that's right.
That's the next Xbox
that's
console.
Halo,
the
right?
next Xbox console is just going to be called Xbox Origins.
The gritty Xbox reboot.
Yes, oh my God. The Xbox with a, you have to include the in the title. Yeah.
Okay, so the One X is like its entire sales pitch is sort of built around 4K. And what I discovered this past weekend is while I think of myself as like not super tech savvy, but like competent,
right.
at least like basic, like I can look, I can plug in an HDMI cable
right.
with the best of them.
You don't need to spend extra money to come have someone come over and install a console for you after you buy it from Best Buy.
Yeah, when's the last time you had to do that?
Right.
Except maybe right now you do.
Oh, no.
Because like so. When I first plugged in the One X and it's going through its startup thing and I take about 25 minutes to remember what my Outlook password is, and so I can finally sign into my profile, I realized the TV's not like it's not displaying a 4K image, like the Xbox is not outputting in 4K, and I'm like, okay, whatever, I will just go into the video output settings and take care of that. I go in there and the Xbox is like, well, hold your horses, buddy. You don't have a 4K TV. We can't output 4K. We can't output HDR. You've got a 1080 TV. So that's what you got.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't quite figure out how to solve this. And it turned out that this may have been an issue with my TV, but apparently there were two HDMI modes
uh-huh.
that my TV was taking. HDMI 1.4 or HDMI 2.0.
Which one? And you plugged into 1.4.
No, oh. They're the same plug.
What?
It's like, no, it's just a mode.
Is this true for all TVs, or is it just your weird TV?
Austin, I don't know. I don't know.
It's
2017.
Problem.
The TVs have stopped making sense.
In my day, we just had a big TV. We had a big TV, and it was good. It stretched out the games.
It weighed 800 pounds.
Yeah. We wheeled it around.
Yeah. I think this is all TVs, but the thing is, so like HDMI has changed formats, but the cables haven't, is what I understand. And so most
is that
times
coming?
Plugging,
are we going to get new HDMI cables?
Oh God, there is another format coming. It's HDMI, I think like 2.2, and that's the one
this.
Sort of with the built-in copy protection, which is going to be super awesome.
Wait, really? How are we going to get around that? We have to record things for a living.
Yeah, I have not fully gone through the ramifications of it, but it sure sounds to me like your cable itself is HDCP 2.2 is going to be like fighting piracy through the fucking cable. I don't understand how or why, but there you go. Enjoy your dystopia. Anyway, so my TV was set to automatically determine what settings it's what HDMI cable it's getting. I change it from auto to force it to like interpret everything as HDMI 2.0, which I assume is better. And I'm like, all right,
it has
what
a two
weird
in
little
it.
Glitch.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, what a weird glitch. Back to the Xbox. I'm sure it's fixed. The no. Xbox does not feel the situation has been resolved. The Xbox is pretty adamant that it's like, okay, well, look. You may have a 4K TV, but you sure as shit don't have an HDR TV. And you certainly can't output with 10-bit color. You get 8 bits.
Fucking God.
And I'm like...
But, like, that's not a...
10 bits is a thing?
Right. This, okay, also, so this to me speaks to, like, the problem with 4K, with the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X, and like the move to 4K in general, which is like, yes, I bet Planet Earth 2 or whatever looks really dope, but when we switched from standard definition to high def to like 1080 to 720, like that leap was so clear. The move from like, oh, the game is a 3x4 box on my screen to all games are widescreen now was so obvious to me as like an improvement. And part of it was, like, yeah, there were different types of HDMI or, you know, HDTVs, and some of them used HD, you know, by the time I got into HDTVs and HD game consoles and stuff, yes, you could use component cables or you could use I've already forgot the name HDMI cables. Like, yeah. Yes, like, there were some differences, but, like, I knew what 720p was. I knew what 480, 720, and 1080 were. And, like, those were the three things I needed to know. Like, yes, I guess I needed to know 1080i, but, like, not really. Like, it just looked better all around. Whereas now, like, when Microsoft got in touch to be like, hey, we're going to send you some Xbox One X review consoles, they were like, what TV do you have? And do you want to buy one that we know will work? That's literally a thing that they offered. They were like, no. And I thought about it. Like, I legitimately was like, oh, tell me what the prices are. And it wasn't, like, not that expensive to get their one TV. I almost was like, oh, maybe I'll do a new TV. But I just bought a TV last year. But, like, their TV had the right specs. And my TV, like, I don't have HDMI or I don't have HDR on my home TV. We have it on one of the TVs at the office, but not the main one that we use. We have to look at it on the other TV if you want to see what HDR looks like.
The tall one?
The one that's above the real TV that we use, are like the one that we like look at ourselves on, our confidence monitors.
Right,
that
right,
one has HDR, but the bigger TV doesn't. So we have to, like, if I want to see it looking as good as it can be, I have to, like, rerun it to a different whole thing. And it's the fact that there's not, that this isn't standardized is the problem right now.
It's because we're in the middle of everything,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
Like 3 years from now, it'll be just like HD, where it's just everything's just built into everything. The quirks are worked out, but I think it is telling that, like, people who are paid to do this for a living, like ourselves, it's
frustrating.
If it's frustrating and confusing to us, imagine what the pitch is to a, you know, average consumer that's trying to figure out, like, what these. I mean, these are the new things that I field, like, amongst, like, family and friends that are, like, interested in video games, and they're like a Pro or an Xbox One X, and they're like, I don't know if my TV supports that, and it's a confusing road to even walk people down that, you know, it'll fix itself eventually, but right now it's pretty shitty.
Fortunately, I was guided to the promised land by the amorous sloth.
What?
Of Planet Earth 2.
Oh, okay.
It was my guide. Through this experience, I could not make the HDR work, and I was I did not really solve this problem. Instead, I was like, I wonder what would happen if I just stick this HDR DVD in that drive and say, eat that signal, you fucker.
Jesus Christ.
And look, it was a long
Connect.
Morning
eat
I started
that signal,
I
you fucker.
I started this process early in the morning. I was like, gonna get my ex boinking on first thing in the morning before I've had my coffee.
Oh, a morning and, like, boink, huh?
So from 5 a.m. until, like, 8:30 in the morning, I'm just, like, moving HDMI cables. And, Austin, I was pricing monster HDMI cables on Amazon. I was like,
fired.
Maybe
I don't even have that power. You're fired.
Yeah. So,
you gotta at least take a sabbatical, my guy. You have to go. You gotta go and, like, get your head straight.
Go get some malt liquor. Go into the forest and legs. Come back.
And you come back with Amazon basic cables like the rest of us.
No, I was like, maybe the gold plating is where the HDR is.
No!
Maybe that's how this works.
I can't believe that Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre have deceived you.
So. Anyway, so I just threw in Planet Earth 2, which is an ultra-high-def Blu-ray, and the moment that thing started sending a 4K HDR signal, my TV, like, flickered, and the Xbox was like, oh, hey, you got a 4K TV with HDR. Do you want 8-bit color depth or 10-bit? And I was like, 10 sounds better.
10 is more than 8.
And then Planet Earth 2 opens on the... on the journey of a amorous sloth alone on his island.
How do you know it's amorous?
Because Attenborough tells me so.
You just know.
You
Austin.
See it in the eyes of the sloth.
Yeah, he's like, this sloth is really lonely. Aww. And definitely horny.
He's got the bedroom
and,
eyes.
Yeah,
this lonely sloth is looking for a morning boink.
So
God damn it.
Fixed the problem, sort of, in a way, by brute forcing the solution. But then I was finally seeing, like, HDR 4K content.
Was it good? Like, at the end of the day, like, did you have a good time after the sloth left?
It's after the sloth finished.
I hate everything.
Actually,
everything.
Spoiler: he doesn't.
Amorous sloth doesn't find love.
No, he goes across this entire goddamn island, and it takes a while because he's a sloth, and they move in slow motion. So he gets there, and it turns out that, like, he thinks he heard a mating cry But when he gets there, there is a female sloth, but she's already got an infant. And so he's like, well, this fucking sucks.
What? No.
And that's how it ends.
Moms, everybody needs love, okay? I'm not here to mom shame. It's not going to happen, sloth. All
single
right?
Moms in your area. That's what the ad said.
Apparently, look, the way Attenborough explains it, like, when they're nursing an infant, business sure. hours are over.
I see. You gotta okay. you're in the middle of being in nursing mode. That's yeah. fine. Okay, I get it.
So that sloth is now on Twitch. and, anyway, so I will say, like, with things like movies, so I got a bunch of like 4K movies to look at, mm-hmm. and it's not that jump from standard definition right. to 1080. Like, it is just nowhere near that dramatic. On the other hand, HDR can really be something mm-hmm. At times. Like, you know, there's a moment I was watching the first John Wick, and you know the bathhouse shootout mm-hmm. in that movie? And there's that scene where he goes up onto the dance floor and he's sort of fighting in the gallery above the dance floor, and there's the lights. Mm-hmm. When the lights come up and, like, shine into the camera, like, it is bright enough to, like, trigger your squint reflex.
Wow.
Real quickly. Like, it is a really, like, vibrant and, like, it's a hyperbolic term, but it is a little bit, like, eye-popping, right? Like, mm-hmm. it is, like, it creates sort of a physical sensation that, like, I'm not familiar, like, that other TVs just don't. It really is impressive. And that's, and when a game leverages that, like Assassin's Creed Origins, aka Xbox Origins,
uh-huh.
it's really, really impressive.
Okay.
And Assassin's Creed Origins definitely, like, makes the best use of its setting and art to really kind of show off what, like, 4K high dynamic range games can look like.
Mm. What so, like, what stuck out to you in that, like, visually? How far into that are you, actually?
So I just finished that sort of introductory area.
Siwa, yeah.
Yeah, and I actually did like it. I kind of enjoyed how crazily out of context it is.
Oh, God.
It's definitely, it's awkward as hell. It starts with just basically plunging you into the middle mm-hmm. of the action after a really inscrutable opening cutscene.
Yep.
But at the same time, like, it is kind of cool the way that then turns into sort of an unveiling of this character's, like, grief and anger over the course of, like, different cutscenes and things you encounter mm-hmm. in the world. Like, just before I left Siwa, I sort of journeyed out into the desert. And, you know, first of all, like, I got caught in a sandstorm.
Those are cool. So, like, I actually like those a whole bunch.
Yeah, and, like, so it's like, he says, like, uh-oh, there's a sandstorm coming, and I look, and I see, like, the dust storm blowing across the desert, and, like, the light is being filtered through, like, the highest, you know, drifts, basically, of the advancing, like, wall of sand. It's really impressive. There was kind of a really kind of affecting moment of, I found, like, a campfire out in the desert. It's a stargazing site.
Right. Yeah.
And that was, like, a really great moment as it lands of, you find this place where your character and his son, like, sort of just laid out under the mm-hmm. stars and told stories. And it was gorgeous. And you're looking up into this, like, beautifully, like, realized night sky and having these two characters talk to each other in the background. And it is this, like, really glorious experiential moment of, like, it was like eavesdropping on some little kid and a father, you know, stargazing.
I just feel like that intro felt like they built all of those linearly and then were like, oh no, we're going to do it in media res and toss you right into the action, and then we'll deliver those little story beats as things just in the open world later. And I guess I respect the experimentation, but would have probably rather the version where I just got to be a dad for a little while before things blow up. And, like, I don't know. Anyway, I still think that the game, for me, like, then you leave and everything else kind of becomes a little more straightforward, and you get the information of, like, here's what's going on, here's what you care about. And I do care about it, and I'm excited that at some point I'm going to try to go back to that game. I just wrote a piece last week about how, like, it's been really hard for me to go back to games this year, but there is a lot there that is really good, and a lot of people who I like say it continues to be good throughout the remainder of the game, so I'm going to try to put some more time into that for sure. And it's just gorgeous, so, like you said.
Yeah, and like the thing that really hit me was my first assassination, basically. You're stalking this like evil priest as he's sort of walking around the temple grounds and starts to leave the temple. And I'm up on the rooftops, sort of like looking down and stalking him below. Mm-hmm. And I'm backlit. The sun is sort of fading behind me. And so I've got my target down there below on the streets, and I'm sort of hopping along the rooftops. And I notice the way it is working out is my shadow is projected behind this guy as he's walking. My shadow is leaping and crouching and sort of like walking along behind him. And it's this really like creepy, unsettling, because the backdrop keeps changing. And so like sometimes your shadow is falling across something really close and it becomes like this hugely exaggerated, disproportionate, like monster. And then it like, you know, fades away and it becomes like just, you know, your shadow, the shadow of a man in the background. But it reminded me so much of that shot in like Lawrence of Arabia where he's sort of victoriously like dancing along the top of the derailed train. Mm-hmm. And a shadow is playing out over the crowd. It was such a great moment. And this whole representation of like the shadow of the assassin stalking mm-hmm. his target as he moves through the streets, like just waiting for his moment. It was amazing.
Well,
it was,
and that it just gets to the heart of
the cool things I've seen
of that series, which it had gotten away from to some degree. I mean, maybe it hadn't. I didn't play Syndicate. I didn't play Unity, but I like, even though I kind of liked Black Flag, it still felt like it had lost what had attracted me to the series to begin with. And certainly true for three. And so like, It is cool that like just the notion of like I'm moving through this place and I have a mastery over it. I can move up vertically through it in ways that other characters can't or aren't by default. And like I am stalking my prey and figuring out the best moment to strike is just good in Origins. And I think that when things blow up into big combat encounters, that has also been a lot more fun than I expected it to be. So I'm going to try to get back to it a little bit maybe by the end of the year. Anything else stick out with your Xbox One X weekend? Your X-Boinks weekend?
I mean, no, it's a console of a lot of like meaningful but marginal improvements, right? Mm-hmm. But like for me as someone who's been out of the Xbox, well, never really got into the Xbox ecosystem.
Oh, wow.
All that much. Like it was just never my console of choice. I was always like a PC and PlayStation guy. Mm-hmm. This is a pretty great console, and you know, 4K, you know, HDR Blu-ray is a pretty nice thing when you've got a good transfer. But I think it very much is meant for it's very much meant for somebody who's like I think going to take advantage of all these features mm-hmm. and enhancements it provides. I do wonder if the value proposition is as clear-cut as, say, over, you know, if you already have a console from this generation, is the Xbox One X that compelling?
Right.
For me, I think it would be, but I was someone dumb enough to buy a 4K TV that he clearly didn't understand.
Right. Now you get to justify that previous purchase by saying, now it lets you use this. I'll say, like, I never had an Xbox One X in my house, right? Like, we had one for a while as a unit at work. For the most part, I was happy to play stuff that came out on the One X on PC, because I have had a decent PC for a couple of years now. This was the first time, like, fucking around with the One X, and especially seeing stuff like Assassin's Creed Origins there, seeing stuff like Shadow of War there, after having spent time elsewhere with those, was like, oh, like, there was a moment the other day where I just, like, defaulted to reaching for an Xbox controller to play something instead of a PlayStation one, and yep. That was like, oh, shit, like, this thing may have worked on me, you know? Like, I think about upcoming new releases stuff in 2018. Like, I might start requesting Xbox One X code or Xbox One code instead of PS4 code because though some of the stuff that just fundamentally will run better, like, yeah, why wouldn't I want to play it there?
It's the closest thing you're going to get to a PC experience on a console.
Totally.
Like,
that's just, totally.
Like that, you know, like, that's part of the appeal of the Pro, right? If you own multiple consoles but didn't want to deal with PC stuff, was that the Pro got you the closest you're going to get to PC level performance with like a decent rig, and now the Xbox One X, like that's now the closest you're going to get to that. And I think if you're an Xbox One only owner, like if that's the ecosystem that you're a part of, mm-hmm. I think the Xbox One X is a much more compelling upgrade, even if you don't have 4K and HDR.
Yeah, totally.
Like you're future proofing yourself. Like for they're not going to upgrade this for 3 years. I would say is probably
that
about
sounds
where
right
be at.
To me. We'll be near 2020. Right.
There are upgrades if you only have a like 1080p TV or projector like I have. Like you will get better resolution. Mm-hmm. Like games, you're not going to be
better frame rate also.
Yeah, like you're going to get upgrades that are I think make it a like not essential, but like I think you'd be perfectly happy with it even if you don't have all the extra components mm-hmm. that it's being marketed as.
Totally. All right, let's move into some questions. Let's dip into
the
question bucket.
It's because I'm on this episode.
It is not.
That's what it is. It absolutely is.
It's because I played an anime game this morning. That's what it is.
It's a mix.
It's a mix. This comes in from Chris, this comes in from K-Pax, actually, who says...
K-Pax?
It's not your favorite.
It's Tainan now. Shit.
That's a shame, like... I feel bad for this person who named themselves K-Pax on the internet long before shitty K-Pax.
I don't know if I feel bad.
Yeah, that's a questionable decision to begin with before we learned anything about Kevin Spacey.
It's K-Pax with two X's at least, so it's a different K-Pax.
It's like Lord Shax, but K-Pax. The Destiny 2 remix.
Exactly. I finished Prey a few days ago, and since then, I've been overwhelmed trying to decide which game to start next. There's so many things I have to play through from this year alone. Tacoma, XCOM 2 War of the Chosen, Nier Automata, Wolfenstein 2, in quotes, Night in the Woods. After days of indecision, I ultimately decided to go with Nier based purely on the fact that I would finally be able to go back and listen to that Nier Automata spoiler cast episode of Waypoint Radio. When there's a list of things on your plate, be they games or stories or whatever else, how do you prioritize where to start first? Prioritize. I don't know why I said it the way I did, but
I don't prioritize. I still have Breath of the Wild to play.
You should play that game.
I just started Mario Odyssey. I started Nier, months and months.
But how did you decide to do Nier before doing some of that other shit?
Because I think a mix of like all of you being so
sure
ecstatic about that game, and just a lot of people like Breath of the Wild, but I didn't have a Switch, so it's like I had a PS4. I'm gonna get whatever's easiest. I'll get Breath of the Wild now that I have a Switch, but I'm gonna finish Odyssey first. So. Uh-huh. I'm bad at prioritizing. I just, I didn't play Battlegrounds until 6 months after it came out.
Yeah, that's fair. Rob, what about you? As the year closes in, as the end of the year closes in.
Oh God!
Also, this is around us.
Yeah, this is that magical time of year where I open a new Word document with things to play for year-end discussions, and then I list about 30 or 40 games that absolutely need to play before the end of the year.
Too many.
And then I realize, well, that can't work.
No.
And then I think, where should I even, like, how do I cut this list? And then I think, okay, I've cut it down to a reasonable 25 games, but then where to start? And then I think about, I don't know where to start. And then I start watching something on Netflix.
That's a good prioritization right there. Patrick, yeah. how about you? Do you have a slightly more productive method of zeroing in?
Well, what I end up doing is I do something similar to Rob. Like I'll like ask on Twitter, like, hey, like, is there a game that you think that is going to get overlooked? Or I list the games that I meant to try and I'll do is like dip into those games mm-hmm. a little bit, like 90 minutes with each game to try and figure out is there one game that hooks me so fast? I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like I should have played this earlier this year. This happened to me years ago with Bayonetta 2. Where this was I can't remember when that game came out. Maybe it was right before the Giant Bomb Game of the Year awards. But whatever
it was,
the case,
like, it was because that's when you took it there because you were on a plane.
Yeah, I took it. I think, but it was the kind of thing where I normally would have just brushed it aside and be like, oh, I just don't have time for that. But I played an hour of it and was like, oh fuck! Like, and it went from a game that I normally would not have played or given much attention to I think it ended up being like my number one or two favorite game that year. And so that's sort of how I don't try and put on myself that I'm going to beat 30 games between the middle of November and whenever I have to make my choices for the end of the year, because I just know that's not going to happen, and I don't live in a world where I can take a week off and really dive in that way with a bunch of games. But I do kind of set aside like probably five games. It's like, okay, I need to put time with these five games, and then I can probably establish one of them as like, okay, I'm going to see this through because maybe that's going to shift up the rankings of the games I'm going to consider at the end of the year. I mean, I feel at this point I don't need to play Assassin's Creed Origins. Like, I'll probably like that game. I'll probably play that
next year.
Next year, or like when we take like our time off. At the very end of the year, where it's like that's a game. But I just don't. There's nothing that anyone said about that game that's like I really need to play it. It's gonna shake up the games that I loved this year. I just don't see that being possible. Right. So there are some games that I just sort of write off and just realize I do feel bad about like games like Persona 5, where it's like I bet that game would have been one of my favorite games this year, and I really liked the 20 hours I played. I just didn't.
But also, it's 20
have time for the other
hours
80
that you put
hours.
In. That's a lot of hours.
Yeah,
it's not. Like
but I didn't put in the other 80.
Right. I mean, that's definitely it for me too. Is like I'm in that mode now of dipping into stuff to like check to see if like, oh wow, is this a thing I need to actually think about? You know, blocking off more time with. Like, I just bought Hollow Knight last night. It's like, okay.
Oh, yay.
I need to play Hollow Knight. I know, Danica, you've been talking to me about it a little bit. My friend Jack's been talking about it.
I'm just waiting for the Switch version at this point. I liked what I played. Right. I liked what I really played of it. And then when there are certain indie games that are becoming victim, at least for me, of like, Dead Cells was the same way. I played like 90 minutes of it and I was like, one, I'm going to wait till this game's almost done. Two, I would rather just play this game on Switch. And, like, Hollow Knight, I believe, is coming to Switch next year.
Right.
And that's when I'll finally play that game, which sucks. But that's the preferred format I'd have for games like that.
The other thing I just want to say is, like, you know, don't feel bad about not getting to everything. Like, there's a lot of great stuff
especially this year.
This year has been fantastic. And, like, enjoy the stuff you got. Enjoy the stuff that you are interested in. And prioritize your taste. Like, you know, obviously I like saying to try out new things, too. And, like, if someone says that they have, like, a cool new, you know, there's a cool thing that you should check out and you'd like it, of course, like, try to make the time to dig into it if you have a friend who's recommended something and wants to talk to you about it. Because, like, sometimes the joy is not just in playing a thing, it's in getting to talk with a friend about a thing. But also, like, if you're just having a good time with Yakuza or whatever, like, it's okay that you haven't gotten to Battlegrounds. It's okay that you haven't spent time with Horizon Zero Dawn or Zelda yet. Like, I might think that maybe Zelda is the best game to come out in years, but, like, that's okay. It's okay that I think that if you want to spend more time with you know, Kiryu Kazuma, that's totally fine, and don't beat yourself up over it. And, like, these things aren't going anywhere, right? Like, for the most part, anyway. Like, outside of, like, the Miiverse, most things don't disappear. Related,
way to bring me down right now.
Well, briefly, love the people should go watch Danica be on the Giant Bomb Goodbye to Miiverse stream, because that was very good and funny. for the most part, like, you'll be able to play most of these games next year and for cheaper. So build yourself a little bit of a backlog. Think about, like, the joy that you'll get in the future. You're not having fun now. You're saving it for the future, for a rainy day, when then you can boot up whatever, Nier or Persona. So
that's snowy day, please.
A snowy day. Yes, exactly. Get all warm. Get all cozy. Get yourself some hot chocolate. Think about sad robots. That's what I'm talking about.
See, I'm going to Egypt. About, yeah. Right.
That's
plan.
Your Egypt plan, yeah. Well, like, my actual answer is I'm in charge of this website, which means my list goes up last, which means I just spend that whole week of our end of the year stories going up, playing games and changing my list around. So, it's useful.
Oh, I remember last year.
Last year was a fucking mess because of a web dev thing. Do you remember this? Maybe no one does, because we had all this artism behind the scenes shit. We had all this art ready for the Waypoint High end of the year stuff, and it was all sized according to what the web development team said was the size for the the header images. So it had like cool frames on them, and they all said like class of 2016 and Waypoint High, and they all had banners, and like it was a whole thing. And then it was wrong. Dimensions on all of the photo or all the images was just not correct. Like the images that they were, or the images were sized correctly, but the website was not. The website was lying to us about how big the images were for headers and stuff. And so I had to redo. It was me and freelancer Janine Hawkins redid all of the images and resized them all to fit the new thing. And I like that literally took dozens of hours to do, even though it shouldn't have. It was such a fucking mess. Ugh. This year, I think we got a better handle on the CMS. It's a new back end that we've like wrapped our heads around. We've spent some time with it. It should be fine this year. Mm-hmm. Fuck. And also, we're starting to come up with themes. I think Danielle suggested a theme I really like, so look forward to that. One more question, then we'll leave, because I think this is actually related to, like, don't beat yourself up. This comes in from Kate, who says, I was wondering if you could talk some more about gaming difficulty and feeling like, quote, a proper gamer. A while back, Austin made a comment about being fine playing on the, quote, baby difficulty, because he's just trying to live his life, and it really struck me. I realized I have this weird guilt about not playing games properly, quote, unquote. I often play on easy or normal, and I save and reload to get the results I want. I tend to play the same games over and over and abandon it in the middle if I stop having fun or getting distracted, only to start over again the next month. On top of this, I'm a woman, and since the only shooters I play are turn-based, I prefer city building and Sims type games, so of course I'm not a quote-unquote real gamer. Since I'm now an adult who is in charge of my own life, I've shed a lot of this guilt and just save and reload to my heart's content. Gaming is what I do for fun, after all. It's what I do when I need to fast-track relaxation. All my other hobbies involve things that you can fuck up irrevocably. It's nice to be able to hit that quick save for once, but there's still that lingering feeling that I'm doing it wrong. I'd really like to hear your thoughts on how this plays out in your own lives, as well as how it intersects with different types of identities and limitations, like living with microaggressions or with a disability making regular life hard and tiring, or not being able to play certain games at all because of their control systems being physically difficult. Related, Danielle actually just wrote about this on the site, so if that's interesting to you, you should go give that a read. Or things like not being able to afford a platform and playing lots of phone games instead, etc. Thanks so much, Kate from Australia. Yeah, I think, like, all of those are, like, get down to this thing that we started the conversation with, which is, like, this notion of gamer identity and, like, who counts as a gamer and what real gaming looks like. And it's frustrating because, again, like, part of holding companies accountable for shitty business practices, awesome, I'm on board. But it's, like, when to do that, you end up constructing this, like, this is what a true gamer and real games look like shit. Mm-hmm. Is, like, it's a degenerative strategy. Like, it's a strategy that makes the community worse and that will make games worse instead of making them better. And, like, I don't know, let people live their lives. Don't, yeah. I guess, like, the thing is, like, I get wanting to be proud because you beat a game on hard, right? Like, I started this podcast by bragging about being good at a fucking game going three times the speed, right? So, like, I get wanting to be proud about pushing yourself hard and beating a game you love on a higher difficulty or whatever, but like, you know, you're right to swing your arm, your fist stops at someone else's face, and unless that person's a Nazi, and I don't think that's this case. I think this case is just, like, let people play the game on whatever difficulty they want, and you as a person should feel totally fine doing that too. Does anyone here have similar things? Yeah.
I think it's all an internal thing. It's really person by person, case by case, because regardless of how you feel inside, like, I play almost every single game I play on easy, and regardless of me feeling okay about that, people will still have preconceived notions or stigmas about people playing on easy. There's, you know, people will always give me shit about it.
Yeah.
That will always happen. And so I think it's really, like, being secure, feeling okay with how you play games, and not really worrying about what constitutes a real gamer, because I think if you play video games at all, you are this gamer, you know. And, you know, people give people shit for not finishing games, and it's just, like, people will always get shit. Obviously, if you are a person who is marginalized, you will get more shit on top of that.
Right.
But it's really this, like, coming to terms with it yourself and deciding, you know, what makes you feel good about the way that you play games, and just going with that.
Yeah, like, get the joy that you want out of these things, right? Like, that's that's part of the thing. It's like, it takes away from games for me to think of them as this thing that you have to only think about as, like, in their purest state. Like, when is a game at its most pure? Is it when it's on legendary difficulty? Like, don't belittle Halo. Do you know what I mean? Like, Halo's good on easy. That's not a negative.
And also take into consideration the fact that, like, when you started Nier, like, you weren't really sure which difficulty to choose.
Yeah,
I chose easy because I play on easy. And at the end of that game, everyone was recommending that you turn the difficulty all the way down and just go.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So.
Totally. Rob and Patrick, do you have any difficulty or otherwise, like, accessibility thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think everything you guys said was very healthy and mature.
Uh-huh, here we go.
And I'm haunted by this conviction
uh-huh.
that I am playing games wrong at all times.
Always?
I mean, probably. But I think you brought up Halo, and that's a good example. Halo, as well as like Myth, The Fallen Lords,
which you've been playing recently. Nice work.
Been playing a lot of that lately. But both Bungie games, and both of them kind of like point you. Like Halo explicitly says, like, ah, heroic, the way Destiny,
right.
The way Halo is meant to be played. And to a degree, like I believe that bullshit. Or more to the point, I guess what I start to worry about is on the lower difficulty levels. Are things going to start breaking down? Are certain effects going to be lost because the game no longer really supports them, right? Is there going to be a moment That's of dramatic fair. Tension that, like, is going to be spoiled because, like, to make that scene work, you know, the AI actually needs to be able to land a shot on you or at least threaten to do meaningful damage. And at this difficulty level, you start to realize that they're very much like, you know, original trilogy stormtroopers just sort of ineffectually blasting away. And so that does sort of probably loom too large. And so I end up being, you know, Captain Dunning-Kruger when it comes to, like, choosing difficulty level, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's why when I started playing XCOM 2, the first time around, I was like, Iron Man.
Right. And that was...
Yeah. I think I'm an Iron Man.
And you're wrong.
I bet I can play on normal difficulty. I was very wrong, absolutely. But some of my friends were like, oh man, I only play these games on Iron Man now. And I was thinking, yeah, I'll bet that's the right way to play XCOM. It was not remotely. But so basically, I'm weak. I haven't done the work on myself that the two of you clearly have. And so I am very easily, like, I can very easily get like Marty McFly'd into playing a game in a really shitty way that ruins the entire experience.
Part of this is on games themselves, though. So, like, for example, Wolfenstein: A New Colossus, which I finished, and we have a plan for this podcast. You will have a podcast over the Thanksgiving holiday.
I was ready for a podcast, to be clear. I was ready for it. Now it's a different podcast, and I'm not ready.
I was not ready for that podcast, and I abused my power by making it a different podcast. It's now double podcast.
So that game has some really weird and interesting difficulty spikes, one of which I wrote about and I think like plays into the narrative of the game. But there's another difficulty spike at the very end of the game. The final sort of encounter is just like ridiculously hard for no – like it's a game in which you're like very overpowered for a lot of it and then occasionally it like pushes back in a way that I don't think is always successful. And it's a game that – because I think the narrative stuff is so strong that it would – as much as I like the mechanical elements of that game, I think there's like every reason for a lot of people that even aren't like shooter inclined to play that game on its easiest setting so you can see all the really interesting stuff it's doing with its world and setting and characters. But the way it presents the difficulty is that like literally the easiest mode has BJ Blazkowicz with a pacifier in his mouth and wearing like a baby bib and it's being condescending to you.
Wearing diapers to own the libs. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. Good. If you don't know what... Okay. We're not... You know what? No
just let it... Just
keep
let
going,
that go.
Keep going,
just let
Patrick.
That go.
Keep going.
And it's condescending to you in a way that is unnecessary. And also, I think, is, like, contradictory to, like, the narrative, like, thrust of that game, which is, like, treating people as people with, like, respect and humility that is not... contradictory to the way it's presenting its difficulty slider, because that the way it's presenting that difficulty slider is reinforcing this shitty notion that we're talking about that's at the base of this question of where, like, game culture and game design and even, like, the presenting of difficulty options makes it seem as though you are getting a lesser experience by playing it on an easier mode when arguably you're getting the best parts of that game even if you're going to die less while you do it. And I find that frustrating and, like, frankly, insulting in a way that it is unnecessary for the game to be engaging in.
Totally. All right. I think that's going to do it for us today. It has been a long one, and I think we're missing HQ, Danica. I
don't know. I'm hungry.
Oh, you think we're missing it?
Oh, shit. Are you watching HQ? Are you playing HQ right now?
But I do know that it's time to take a break wherever you are, test your knowledge, and maybe win some cash.
Can you mute Scott, please? I'm Austin Walker. Find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danica Herod?
You won't go away. You can find me on Twitter at Danica Herod and also at Waypoint.
Danica.
Danica, yes.
What about you, Rob?
You can find me at Rob Zachney on Twitter.
And Patrick.
At Patrick Hobbit.
Find everything we do at waypoint.vice.com, youtube.com/waypointvice, twitch.tv/waypoint, and facebook.com/waypointvice. Give us a follow at those places. It actually means a lot to us. And
check
helps
out our forums.
And check out our forums.
Discourse.waypoint.vice.com.
Discourse.zone. Shout outs, as always, to our forum mods, our Discord mods, and everyone else who helps us do everything that we do. Shout outs to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You up the EP Pale Machine. Find out more of that about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Danielle isn't here to say it. Does anybody else have a thing to say? Since Danielle can't say, be good and be
smoking
good at it.
Smoking big doinks and Amish.
Peace.